Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this 15th of March. I'm Joe Donahue. It is our roundtable on the roundtable, and we've made it to day five. There we go.
Woo!
Good morning.
That's the appropriate response.
Yes,
woo!
Absolutely.
No, yeah. It's not a sports game with the hooting and the hollering.
This isn't a sports.
What is this, a
contest?
A rock and roll concert?
We, you know, you try something new and you want it to go, and it's been a great week, and we thank everybody, and it's been fascinating going over these topics. We have a lot of fascinating topics to talk about today. As always, we welcome you to join in. Sarah will tell us how to do that in just a moment, but before we do that, let me introduce the panel. First and foremost, our good friend Ray Graff is here. Ray.
Hello.
Was with us on Monday, and then he's not been here at work since. So
I don't know if there's a correlation, but perhaps. I mean, you know.
Are you better?
I'm somewhat better. My house has been quarantined by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and everyone's ill.
You have a lot of sick children.
Everyone. Yeah. Every single one.
Is there one child that had made it to school? Or
a couple made it for a couple of days, but today is all five home.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
And
yeah.
You're here.
Do you have pets that are ill, too?
Not that I know of. Although some of the rats aren't looking well. So.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back.
Thanks
so
much.
We do appreciate you you making the effort to come in. We really need you today, so that's great. Also with us is our assistant news director, Patrick Donjos. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Good to have you aboard. This is your maiden voyage on the roundtable. So we thank you for being with us.
Certainly.
And hopefully,
thanks for inviting me.
We won't scare you away. And our roundtable producer, Sarah LeDuc, joins us. She was with us yesterday and joins us again today. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Joe.
How are
Ray,
you,
Patrick? I'm well, thank you.
Good morning.
Hello.
We have some great topics. Let us talk first about how you can get in on this. We are going to start talking about social media. It's one of the first topics we have for today. So, what better way to start talking about social media than to talk about how you can use social media to talk to us?
We have a Twitter account. It's at WAMC Roundtable. Our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can also email us, roundtable@WAMC.org, or go to our website, WAMC.org, and comment on the post there.
Now,
and I have to try to monitor it from in here today.
Mm.
We will see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. You are a very good multitasker. You're fine. And well, when I'm done with this, you can also have this.
Great.
And I'm pointing to a laptop.
Mm. Okay.
Just so you know.
When I'm done with this donut, you can have this napkin. I don't know how that's going to help.
The question we wanted to start off by talking about today is, how important is social media in your life? It seems like we've been talking about this issue a lot this week, just sort of in the periphery, and we thought we would talk about it really sort of head on. There's a very interesting Pew survey that is out that came out in February looking at some of the demographics of social media users. It is a whole report that takes a look at American social networking. Basically, a lot of it is sort of the duh factor. But they reflect that what many of us have observed, that young adults, for example, are more likely than older adults to use social media. Also, internet users under 50 are particularly likely to use a social networking site of any kind, according to the report, and those 18 to 29 are the most likely of any demographic cohort to do so. 83% of those 18 to 29 are using social networking sites.
Mm-hmm.
And which brings up the point, it seems as though it's getting hard in our life to, not that you would want to, but to avoid them. That even in the regular goings on, and I think our program maybe is an example of this, of we want to communicate with you, and the way we've set up to communicate with you is through this social networking. And I you know, Ray and I are sort of on the older end of that spectrum.
Yes, we are.
Sarah and Patrick are on the younger end of that spectrum. So, you know, you sort of grew up with it, I guess, a little bit more.
Well, I mean, I joined Facebook the second year it was up. You still had to have I was really excited to get my University of Albany email because I knew then I could get my Facebook account. So you still had to have an .edu email to get an account.
Right.
They, of course, have changed that. But this is I'm looking at this survey, and it's funny because I know people who I went to school with who are also of the same cohort who would have grown up with MySpace and then eventually moved on to Facebook if they were into that sort of thing. And they, I know a lot of people I went to school with who are in their mid-20s who don't use Facebook because they...
It's passé at this point?
They consider it a, you know, an annoyance. They don't want all the bleeps on their phone and the notifications, and that upsets me because I can't get in touch with them.
Well, it's interesting you mention that because I've noticed in students in my classes, a lot of the students do not use Facebook for two main reasons. Mm-hmm. One, which you mentioned, which is just the annoyance and sort of the, you know, it's yet another thing to watch. But then, of course, which is something that we talked about earlier in the week, is a concern of privacy, is a concern of putting up something that maybe you shouldn't. And somewhere along the line, down the line, an employer or somebody else is going to see it and it's going to bite you. And, you know, simply like, I don't like this. And then somebody says, oh, well, if you don't like that, then we don't want to hire you for this job. So it's an interesting thing and people are wary of it, and I think certainly when you look at our demographic, Ray, we can understand why you'd be wary of it.
You know, the interesting thing about this Pew poll, and I'm sorry you guys sent the link last night and I didn't see the email until today, but looking at this...
So you were that kind of kid that did your homework, right? No, it was on the morning before class?
My dog ate my computer and it was...
so, he's been ill.
So here's the thing. This Pew internet poll, okay... The thing that stands out to me the most at this moment in 2013, the age demographics here, 65 plus, 32% are on social media now, and that number will only grow.
Yes.
This just shows you where this is going.
Now, I will note that this is that percentage is of internet users, so that it's sort of that subset.
Well,
but it's still a very interesting number, and you're absolutely right. It's only going to grow because our reliance has become more and more and more. I know, you know, before my parents passed, that they were always decrying the fact of, well, if we want to see pictures of the grandchildren, we have to get a Facebook account.
No,
because
absolutely.
Apparently that's the only way they send photos of the grandchildren now.
This is quite staggering. Now, of course, 67% is Facebook. Facebook is the granddaddy at this point and the big moneymaker. But, I mean, you know, even things like Instagram, 13% of people online are using that. Now, that's something I don't use. I know Sarah's always putting up the sepia tone pictures.
Well... it's important to show the world how artistically talented I am when using a point-and-shoot.
Well, it's very nice.
No. It's funny. I was thinking about when you proposed this topic for today that the question, as you framed it, is how important is social media to you? I love social media, but I don't want to pretend it's important, if that makes sense.
That makes
perfect
sense.
I use it all the time, as all of you know. I tweet and I'm on Facebook and I use Instagram. But when it comes to, like, if I have to work instead, I will always work instead.
I can vouch for that.
Right? Yeah, so, yeah. Or whatever else, like real life things are more important, even though I am completely engrossed in and love social media.
In the same token, though, your and our, I think all of our jobs play
involves
at
it,
this point, yeah, and even a growing amount involves social media. And I mean, the importance of social media, especially in a week like this, with all this news happening, just in terms of making sure you have the latest updates. And for example, with the shooting in Herkimer County, I was relying heavily on Twitter and, you know, finding those people who were on the scene to kind of get those first up-to-the-minute updates and then finding, going from there.
And always taking a Twitter update with a grain of salt unless it's confirmed by news sources, but
certainly
hearing it first and then checking it out because it happens so fast. It's so to the moment.
And, you know, Patrick, he's been doing this a long time. In other words, when the Newtown shootings happened, I think I was on the air. This show was
on. We were on the air
together,
at that
point. And, you know, Patrick was on the Twitter feed, and a lot of the things that came through initially were bogus. So you have to take it all with a grain of salt. But there's a tremendous, in our work, and I think in a lot of different jobs and industries, there is tremendous potential here.
Yeah. You know, I want to key into something that Patrick said, that he was very specific in what he said, and that was to find out who's on the ground there through Twitter. I know that as a news organization, we were struggling with the fact of who do we send, where's there, right. What are our resources, what do we do, how do we cover this, what's on. And through Patrick and Sarah and Ian and myself, you know, there would be these screams out, oh, so-and-so, I see they're on their way. Oh, okay, well, we can call them. Well, what
somebody
about this person?
Yeah, who doesn't work for WAMC, but will contribute to
right.
Us.
Oh, they're doing this.
Pardon me.
You still sick?
I have a cough button, but there are three other microphones.
Do you need a lozenge?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
I'm sure we could acquire.
Like some Chloraseptic.
Pardon me.
It's quite all right. Sorry. I have my mask on.
So yeah. I feel very good about this.
The hills are alive with the sound of mucus.
We're going to take a break in just a moment.
Why?
Because I think we should clear everybody out.
We need to acquire
out.
Lozenges.
That's right. Okay. Get lozenges. And then we're going to continue our conversation about social networking and talk about an interesting story where Facebook wants to incorporate the hashtag.
Oh, boy.
Love
copiers,
it.
Copiers. We'd love to hear from you as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable on the Roundtable. WAMC's Ray Graff is here and is back and is all coughed out, and that's good.
Now.
Assistant News Director Patrick Donjes is here as well, and our wonderful Roundtable producer Sarah LaDuke is here. And again, thank you very much. We've been talking about social media and social networking, and specifically a recent Pew survey about how we use social networking. As Ray mentioned in our last segment, hey, Facebook is number one. They're the site that most people who use social networking are engaged in. And one of the stories that caught my attention yesterday, and Sarah and I were talking about this last night because it's just I find it to be a fascinating story. This from the Wall Street Journal, that Facebook is working on incorporating the hashtag, one of Twitter's most iconic markers, into its service by using the symbol as a way to group conversations. So for those of you who are not familiar, Twitter uses, you'll use a hashtag, so it'd be like hashtag WAMC. And then if you want to find stories on WAMC, you'll use that hashtag, and it will bring you all of those stories where someone has in some way mentioned WAMC.
Sure.
For
example, the Super Bowl or orange juice, just anything.
Yeah.
The Grammys, whatever the case
right.
may be.
Right.
So Facebook now is saying, hey, that's not a bad idea. So, of course, Twitter, this has been their symbol, the pound symbol, has been a way that they have used it and has been closely associated with Twitter for a long time. Facebook now testing whether to follow Twitter's lead and allow users to click on a hashtag to pull up all posts about similar topics or events so it can quickly index conversations around trending topics and build those conversations up. What's fascinating about this is that it is for people who use Facebook, it is very insular in the sense of this is my world, this is my world of friends, and this is what I want to find out. So now this will allow you to go outside that world and find out what is, quote, trending, what the larger world is saying, what the larger world is communicating. And I think what makes this fascinating is that there's a lot more characters in Facebook than there is in Twitter, so it kind of opens up the universe a little bit.
I don't know how long ago. I mean, Facebook has been competing with Twitter, obviously, since Twitter came into existence. But one of the things that Facebook has done recently that is interesting and I think helpful for me is that they allow you to follow people. So you don't have to friend them, but you can just follow them. So if there's an organization or a person, somebody who's working somewhere, somebody who's doing something that you find interesting that might be a source for a story, then you can get their updates, but you don't have to be their quote-unquote friend and see all of their minutia and whatever the case may be, and
right.
they don't have to see yours.
If their privacy settings allow for that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the things that the Wall Street Journal points out is Twitter and Facebook seem to occupy different poles of the social media spectrum. Facebook was the home of close friends and family. Twitter was the real-life broadcasting device for the rest of the world. And that's pretty much what you were just saying, Patrick.
Right.
But obviously, this work on a hashtag is a sign of the battle between Facebook and Twitter. And what they're competing for, both companies say, is mobile users, people who have the phones
yeah.
in their pocket.
See, I of course, I have both on my mobile device, but I think that you can't be all things. In other words, I think Facebook has a beautiful niche right now. In other words, if I want to keep up with my Aunt Ellen in California.
How is she, by the way?
She's well. The house had some issues, but everything seems fine at this point. This is the way to do it. If I want to follow the New York Giants, or if I want to follow a politician, Twitter is the way to go. And I, for one, I'm not going to go to Facebook and look for news on things. I look for my friends, my family, and, you know, if you look at the numbers, right now, I don't know what Facebook is worried about at this point. They're pulling in $851 million a year, and Twitter expected to make $249, which ain't hey, but clearly there are two separate groups that can coexist, I think. I mean, Facebook does not need to swallow up the hashtag to succeed.
No, but for people who are using, to say that there are two different polls and to have this as a service, because it's now become something that, I mean, we use the word iconic and we sort of use it in a very broad term, but we think of the hashtag as something that is incorporated by Twitter. So now when you, but it becomes like scotch tape, you know, it becomes universal. And then so for Facebook to adopt it kind of makes sense, although I can understand why Twitter's upset.
Sure.
I don't know how it's going to work on Facebook. The hashtag is great on Twitter because of the 140 character length of these updates. And if you're waiting for the white smoke at the Vatican, let's say, you can type hashtag Pope or Pope Watch or whatever the hashtag is for the day and get all those boom, boom, boom updates. But on Facebook, I feel like the fact that they let you expand, you know, right to your heart's content in these status updates, that it doesn't make sense if you're looking for something specific to hashtag it when it's going to be there written anyway, potentially, whatever keywords you're searching for.
Mark Zuckerberg has, the head of Facebook, the founder of Facebook, and said that, chief executive, earlier this month, that Facebook was building the foundation to be the best personalized newspaper for users. And that is something that Twitter has said that they pretty much want to be as well. But again, I think it has to be, this goes back to Ray's point, which I think is a good one, that we use them for different reasons. We want to follow things, but I don't think of Twitter as a way that I can find out what's going, you know, sort of communicate and see the family album that my niece and nephew have put up in Dallas, Texas.
Right.
Right.
So you can use both. I mean, it doesn't really have to be a battle as much as they can be tools that are in your utility belt, if you will.
Yeah.
I think it's easier through one or the other to do certain things, but that given the right added tools and sites and things, that you can pretty much do anything on either service. I mean, it's all just email, really.
Go ahead. No, please.
Anecdotally, my parents, for instance, my mom doesn't use the computer at all. My father is on Facebook and is increasingly like getting a handle on it.
Mm-hmm.
He
And how does that make you feel?
It's fine.
Okay.
He's funny.
All right.
Suddenly Ray becomes a therapist.
I'm not doing anything on there that my parents cannot know about.
Fair
enough. Or anywhere for that matter, mom and dad, if you're listening. But he you know, there's different columns. It took him a while to figure out what you really need to look at and what you don't. You know, for the ads, he would be like, what is this? What do I need to do with this? It's like, it's just an ad for something. You don't do anything with that. I cannot imagine my father, and that's just one person, and I don't mean it as, it's not ageism or anything, but just knowing my dad, figuring out Twitter. I can't imagine him getting that one.
Well, quite frankly, I can't fully figure it out. I guess I figured it out. I just don't make it a regular part of my life. I will use it at times, but I'm not a slave to it. But I'm not really a slave to Facebook either. I'll put up a post now and then. But
famous people, generally. You and famous people.
The dog or, you know, a cute video or something that I see that I'm, you know, particularly worried about. But, you know, one of the things that I think that comes out of, you know, what Sarah was saying, obviously these generations and how we use this content and how we use this technology that is available to us. But one of the things that I found about Facebook that I have found annoying and actually has quite frankly made me pull away from it a bit is the advertising, where my friends are now saying, it'll come up and say, well, Bob Smith has liked The Gap and thinks you'll like it too. And that kind of thing has now become rampant on it. And I find it when you're looking through the feed and going down of seeing all of this stuff and kind of what I would call, you know, the spam type email of the fake pictures of the dog smoking a cigarette or whatever. And, whatever the little joke is, that kind of stuff I find to get a little annoying.
I think that you're going to have to get used to that because it's just like TV commercials. This is where the money is made, and there's money to be made with Twitter and Facebook, and that's why they'll both be here for a long time. In other words, we use Facebook a lot with WAMC. Coca-Cola uses Facebook a lot. They also use Twitter, and so do we. So basically, there is a tremendous amount of money to be made, and frankly, I think TV should be starting to worry.
Absolutely. And although, you know, look, most of television has adapted itself to mobile devices and figuring out how that content can be available on your telephone and on your iPad and your tablets. So it's another thing to look at and to consider. Speaking of television, we are going to talk about what is being called a golden age of television when we return. We're going to take a quick break. We would love for you to join in on the conversation.
If you don't mind, Joe, we have a Twitter reply I would like to discuss before we take this break. The username is Bethlehem NY News, and it says, Sarah said social media is not important, yet you're talking about how important social media is in your discussion today. That's a good point. I mean, social media can be very important, and it has been in a lot of world events. You know, there's all kinds of things in China or in the Middle East, uprisings, you know, that are people are using Twitter in important ways. It's a quick way of disseminating real news, and on-the-ground stuff is happening. I only meant the way I use social media to when I think of something funny to say about whatever I think I'm thinking of.
Kristen
something.
Stewart's dress at the Oscars.
Well, no, not that. But like, but I do, like, I live tweet award shows.
That was Patrick.
I do.
What was she
thinking? I live tweet like the Tony Awards and the Oscars.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to pretend that that is as important as
real
world news.
Yeah. Well, and you were also making the point that, you know, it is something in like television, like radio. I mean, there's a life too. And I think you were fairly clear on that point. But we're going to talk about television when we come back. We're going to talk about this new golden age of television. It's a fascinating time, and we would like to discuss it. We would love to hear from you as well. Roundtable, WAMC.org. Of course, you can Facebook us or tweet us or go on our website, which is WAMC.org/roundtable, and much more. We'll continue our conversation after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable on the roundtable, which will continue during the commercial break. I will note that we're getting ready for our classic television conversation. There you go.
Don't do that.
WAMC's.
I already did. I can't take it back.
You already did what?
I did the Sanford and Sons.
She's pretending to be Gustina.
Well, that's not exactly.
Can I give you a weather forecast to breathlessly deliver for us?
WAMC's Ray Graff is here. Assistant News Director Patrick Donjes is as well. And, of course, our producer, Sarah LaDuke, joins us. And we are talking about many topics, a lot about technology, a lot about social media. And now we look at television. There have been several people have made this comment. I think it was perhaps first made in The Hollywood Reporter about 2 years ago. And since then, people have many different critics, many different writers have latched onto it and have labeled this and have talked about this time, this last 3, 4, 5 years, as a new golden age of television. And I think it comes out of the pay television services that are offering shows for 10, 12, 13 episodes that are where they spend a lot of money on each episode. You see the money on the screen. There's really good acting. There's really good writing. There's really good content. And so I think we can all name our shows, right? So there is Homeland, there is Dexter, there is Breaking Bad, there is Mad Men, there is
Deadwood,
there is Walking Dead, there is...
All right, Pete Deadwood. There was Arrested Development.
I was coming back.
There will be Arrested
Development. There will be Arrested Development again.
House of Cards is now being done on Netflix. The Wire. So these shows are becoming more and more popular. Downton Abbey, of course, which is a PBS television program. There's two main things I want to talk about in this. And first of all is, do you agree with the premise that we are sort of reaching this new, as compared to what we had on television, that there is now quality television that is available to us?
Me? Yes. No, I don't agree. I think at best it's a silver or bronze age because of the balkanization of the medium, in that there are so many options now. In other words, it's analogous, I think, to the golden age of rock. You had radio was king, and the Beatles were king. And there weren't a lot of options. There wasn't MTV. There weren't a lot of other things. So people bought records. People listened to records. People listened to the radio. Now you have TV. And there is not doubting your premise that there is great TV out there, but there's so much TV. There will never be a golden age where there were three networks putting out shows, some of which were classic shows, that everybody watched. There are scattered eyes everywhere. That's why there can't be another golden age.
I think
in the classical sense.
I think you're absolutely right. However, what you're talking about is distribution. And I guess I'm talking about content, of what we're actually seeing on the screen. You think of great shows of yesteryear. You know, when I think of the great shows of when we grew up, and even before we grew up, of Dick Van Dyke, and then going into Mary Tyler Moore and MASH and Barney Miller and these types of programs that the Bob Newhart Show, Newhart shows that I just, and then Cheers and Friends, and you know, the classic television programs that we all think of, perhaps, that we reached that point where there weren't as many of those shows. I mean, you look at a Sunday night lineup in the 1970s where you had Carol Burnett, MASH, Mary Tyler Moore, and Bob Newhart
show. This is where the youngsters start rolling their eyes.
No, oh. I know from Bob Newhart.
Well, I mean, those are all
syndication.
Those are all
Thank
classic
you.
Television programs.
Yeah.
And you go back to an earlier era where you had both The Honeymooners and I Love Lucy. It is what I'm saying is that there was a lot. So then you go to where there's maybe one good show on network television.
Seinfeld.
And, yeah, absolutely. Seinfeld, Cheers, Friends.
It depends on how you define good. In other words, there were a lot of crappy shows back in those days,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
So all my point was everybody watched everything because there were three networks.
Right.
Now, I mean, go ahead, mention those shows again. I haven't seen one. Dexter.
Breaking Bad, Walking Dead.
Not one episode of any of them.
Mad Men.
Because there's so much other stuff
Game
to watch.
Game of Thrones.
No.
Justified.
I think that
the Americans.
I mean, if you're talking, we're talking about distribution, and Joe, you just mentioned a bunch of, I guess, what you'd call prime time slot shows. I mean, shows that
right.
aired between whatever it was 7 and 9. But I mean that's completely blown out of the water now because we have both the internet and your DVRs. Which I mean, I don't watch anything when it's on anymore. I DVR it and. If yeah. I've got time here or there, I'll watch it. So.
Well, it's as if we planned this, Patrick, but it was that was the second part of my conversation yeah. a bit, which is how we watch television, which is now sort of a binge mentality where we find a show. I mentioned the other day that if you know you find a show and I watch it like the entire 8 seasons of it in 2 weeks, and then
what was the one you just finished?
I just finished. We were House of Cards.
House of Cards.
I just finished House of Cards, which
and now
is
you're
on,
watching Louis.
Right.
Another FX series. That network is my bread and butter. I love that network.
House of Cards is a series done especially for Netflix, and it is 13 episodes. Kevin Spacey.
It's an adaptation from there was a British series.
The
British 1990, series was great,
and this is fantastic. It's a great, great show. Robin Wright is in it. It's a
Fincher
it's a,
directs.
David
or,
Fincher right. is the writer producer.
Oh, the writer producer. Okay,
and he also occasionally directs.
Okay.
I think the first and couple episodes
of The Social Network and Fight Club, and
it's mm-hmm. right.
Yeah.
And it's great stuff.
Dragon
it's really,
Tattoo.
Really,
and Justin
good.
Timberlake's new music video. These are the things David Fincher is working on.
Hashtag, all right, well done.
Hashtag
justified.
Fincher. Cover your bases.
So, you know, I find that kind of thing, because we do this binge television consumption, as I believe it's being called, where we...
My friend Patrick Correa calls it pulling a Sarah LaDuke.
Yeah, where you take one show and
you don't leave your house for a day.
And you watch it for forever. And so you find Homeland and somebody tells you, hey, Homeland's a great show. And then you watch two or three seasons of Homeland. Or you find out that, well, only two seasons of Homeland. Or you find, you know, Dexter. Oh, there's seven seasons of that. I recently am in The Wire now because somebody said, oh, The Wire's really great.
It's the best.
And it is the best.
Doesn't that wreck the fun, though? The anticipation is half the fun, don't you think?
No, the anticipation is now finding the new show. And then waiting for the next season of that show to come on. Like right now, Breaking Bad, I've watched all five seasons of Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad will come back on in the summer, and I can't wait for that final season of Breaking Bad because that is truly one of the best television programs I've
seen
in a long time.
Can't see myself doing that. I mean, maybe for Arrested Development. That's the only one I could see binging on. When is that released?
May.
That might be the only one. But I can't see. I love to wait. I love the...
Well, you can still do that.
And there are some shows I know I watched... It was a few years ago now. I watched got a season, I think it was season three of Weeds, Showtime series Weeds, and watched the whole DVD series in a couple of days and could tell that I was missing that week-to-week anticipation that they had still definitely built into the show, because it was almost like all the characters in that show make bad decisions all the time and then say, I'm not doing that anymore. And if there were a week between episodes, you could like forget how recently they had said, I'm not doing this anymore. But because it was all so tight together, I was like, you're just going to keep doing it. just stop or don't stop. Commit.
But the way we watch it now, because so many of us are streaming from either the networks or from Netflix or from iTunes or from
Amazon Prime, HBO Prime, Go, Hulu, everything.
Right, whatever. And so we have it on our phones. We have it on our tablets. We have it on our laptops. And, you know, it doesn't have to be on the 42-inch screen that you have in your living room. It can be on your tablet as you're going to bed or when you're on the subway. So it's funny because, you know, you see people now connected and watching television, but it seems also that what they're watching is of a much higher quality, I guess. I mean, the whole point of our original concept of this question was about the content and the quality of the television. And you look at some of the shows that are out there, there's some really, really good stuff out there. And this, to me at least, and without sounding too snobby, but to me, this is in direct contrast to the, for want of a better term, crap that is on network television, that is the reality shows, that is, you know, celebrity diving, that is, you know, that kind of thing that's out there.
When is celebrity diving on?
No, have you seen it?
There's a real show called Celebrity Diving.
Yeah. Fox did a show that was like death,
Louis Anderson
death defying.
Is diving.
Well, that's going to be, that's the ripoff or the second, whatever it is, CBS or NBC is doing it.
I don't know.
The great part about these, to get back to the crap versus the new batch of shows, the great part about the Netflix and whatever else you might be streaming from is that it really helps you kind of cut through the crap. And, you know, because you can see, oh, X number of people gave Breaking Bad. Like, I started watching Breaking Bad late last year, and it was because I'd heard it was good peripherally, but then I saw on Netflix it popped up as, you might enjoy this. And I thought, yeah, I probably will enjoy this.
No,
and I do.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, and that really does help because you find out, and of course, word of mouth, I think, is the big thing because, you know, you go with your friends and they're like, you haven't watched that yet, and you almost feel, you know, that you've abandoned a loved one.
Well, and another thing about, and I'm not the first or probably within the first few thousand to say this, but Breaking Bad is better drama than probably any movie I've seen in the last 5 years.
Absolutely.
I mean, maybe not any. I'm sure there's, obviously, with that kind of blanket statement, there's exceptions. But it's so compelling, well-written, well-acted, incredibly directed, visually interesting.
And if you're at a pitch meeting at a network and somebody came up to me and said, all right, we got this chemistry teacher and he becomes a meth dealer.
He gets cancer.
And he gets cancer.
It's the dad from Malcolm in the Middle.
Right. I mean, I'm like, what? And I remember people telling me about how great the show was and trying to explain to me what was going on. And it wasn't until I started watching it that I was just, you know, mesmerized by it. And it's funny. And some shows that people tell you about, I have yet to become a huge Walking Dead fan. There's something about that zombie element I just can't get over. I've seen two seasons of it. I don't mind it.
You're not into
He's
it,
really
but you've
trying.
Watched two whole
He's
seasons.
Really trying.
No, I am. It's
That's
like,
no, obviously. I mean, that like, is a devoted
I find it,
try.
Let's put it this way. I find it to be good, again, compared to the crap.
Right.
I find it to be good television, and I will watch it. And the acting is very good, and I understand why people respect it and like it. I personally, it doesn't work for me as much as some other shows do. But that doesn't take away from what it is and what it accomplishes.
I hope, and I think, and I hope you'll agree with me that I think a lot of what The Walking Dead, especially Walking Dead and Breaking Bad, and a lot of these shows have in common, aside from the acting, is great writing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Some of the best writing.
The creators and showrunners are astoundingly talented people who, like, we're starting to hear their names.
Right. Well,
actually their names, and they've been working in the industry forever, but you don't know. They were the, like, eighth room writer on Mad About You. But
people
then
don't know what a showrunner is until, you know.
I wrote that down as a note to bring up today because of this, we now know who showrunners are. You see it in magazines, and Entertainment Weekly writes about it regularly. There's a new showrunner now for this show, and you're like, oh, wow. And that title means something to people, which I find fascinating. We're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to talk about New York City. There's some very interesting, more people have moved into New York City than out of it for the first time in 6 decades.
Wow.
Find that very interesting. We'll talk about that and whatever else crosses our mind coming up next after this short break on the Roundtable. Welcome back to our roundtable. On the roundtable, Ray Graff is here, Patrick Donjus is here, Sarah LaDuke is here, and
this broadcast is interrupting our dance party.
That's right. as it so often does. We're going to change topics and talk about New York City because we want to get Ray in on the conversation.
What?
No, I just feel that maybe television, we were...
I love television. No, I watched the Dick Van Dyke Show last night.
Oh, that's a great show.
Yeah.
It is
I love
great.
That show.
Don just mocked me. We'll have that discussion later.
Okay. For the first time in more than 60 years, according to the Wall Street Journal, more people moved into New York City than out last year. A turnaround that tracks changing attitudes about the nation's biggest city and urban living more broadly. The net influx, about 12,000 people, is a small piece of the city's overall growth to a record high population of more than 8.3 million, according to census estimates released on Thursday. But the statistics help encapsulate New York's rebound from a decline that began after World War II and hit a nadir in the 1970s here and in many other big American cities. So, again, I think we have a generational question, but what is the lure for cities, do you think, that was not there just a few years ago? And especially New York. I mean, because the old adage, especially for us who live upstate, is, you know, it's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. Right?
I used to, I mean, throughout my adolescence, New York, growing up 90 miles away, was always the pinnacle of, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. If you can get it, if you get your shot in New York, then
that should be in a song.
It should.
I think it'll catch on.
But I find that more and more now, I do think like, oh, it's nice to catch a game or a show, but I don't know about being there with the. Just the hassles of
the... Is it the pigeons?
That's
a joke.
The transit and the pigeons. No, but you know what I did. I mean, it's... Everything that's great about New York can also be everything that's terrible about New York.
It's hard. I mean, but I would say that about anything. You know, I mean, as far as traveling, of just getting from point A to point B, whether it be from Albany to Clifton Park, you know, can be difficult. So add to that a 2-hour commuter wherever you are in our region to New York City. It can be a hassle of getting from point A to point B, and quite frankly, quite expensive.
Right. And I mean,
no matter what mode of transportation you take include walking.
For, I mean, when I say transit, I mean, so getting from here to Clifton Park is pretty straightforward, bless you, in terms of you get in your car and you drive, and if the thruway's backed up, the thruway's backed up. But you tend to know that beforehand. But if you're in New York for the day and you need to get across town and you get on the express or you get on a train that all of a sudden, there'll be construction going on for the next 4 hours, then your whole day is pretty much shot. So
you know what fascinates me about that is that when you use that as an excuse, like it's a legitimate excuse of why you can't get from point A to point B, and you call up and you have an appointment at 3 o'clock and it's like 2:50 and you know you're not going to make it because you're, you know, 3 miles away, and you call them up and say, hey, I just want to let you know that I'm on the subway and it stopped and I'm running a little bit late. There is no... They don't tolerate that, really. They don't understand that as much as you would think they would of living in a city.
Well, maybe, I mean, maybe.
I guess you have to block that time out and figure. It's like living in Los Angeles. You know, you have to figure that
time in, of
what it's going to
If it's ingrained it's in you, then I guess you're already, scheduling for it.
But right. Yeah, you learn hopefully how to not be late, or you just are always late one way or the other, I guess. But, I mean, I agree, since we're not there with any regularity. I always often get to New York, meeting somebody at Bryant Park or wherever, and they're in the city, a friend who lives in the city, and I am there before them.
Right.
Yeah.
because of all those same things, the subway, whatever, the blah, the blah, blah.
Absolutely. And this almost, I mean, I don't know for you guys, but it certainly is for me, is that because when I get to the city, I'll get to the city maybe a couple times a month, and when I go, I guess I'm telling you a lot about my personality day to day, but it's a binge thing. You know, I'm in the city, so I'm going to go to all of these bookstores and I'm going to see 8 plays. You know, like that's the kind of thing that I want to do because I'm in the city and it gives me an opportunity to do what I can't, what the country mouse can't do. Yeah. Ray, what do you think?
I think it's interesting. I mean, is this increase in New York City? I'm sorry, I did not do my homework. I did not see this email last night, but is it strictly a factor of immigration? In other words, increased immigration to New York City? I can't quite divine that.
I think the fact is has always been that a lot of people would move to the city, but the number of people that have moved out of the city that have said, okay, I've had enough, that number always eclipsed the number of people who moved in. So now for the first time since after the war, more people are moving in and staying there, and less people are leaving, and that number is higher of the people who have moved in. But you also have to wonder about how much, and again, when the numbers are quite small, would I say 12,000 people or something like that, but you also have to wonder of how much of that is a resurgence in certain communities
like Brooklyn,
where if you are a writer, apparently you are now obligated, a writer or an artist, you have to...
Oh, musicians.
Musicians.
Well, it's cheaper, right? I mean, it's hip, but it's not as expensive. Is that the deal with you, young?
Well, I think it used to be, but I'm not sure it is anymore. But
I think it's
still cheaper than Manhattan.
Much less expensive in Brooklyn, I believe.
Hmm.
And I mean, I know people who live in Brooklyn. I don't know anyone who lives in Manhattan, like around my age.
Right.
Well, that's true. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it becomes a something where people say, okay, this is a happening place for this particular industry or this particular age group, and it becomes more alluring, if you will.
I think that for people, recent graduates, if you don't have a job lined up, then it probably makes sense for a lot of people to just – I mean, people that I went to high school with to gravitate towards the city, and now it's Brooklyn. I mean, I don't know anybody who – I grew up with who lives in Manhattan. I know some people live in Harlem,
I have friends in Queens.
And Queens. I know people in Queens. But yeah, to kind of get to that center because it becomes easier to find a job.
We would love for you to join in on the conversation. All you have to do is email us roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage and Facebook page or by tweeting us @WAMC Roundtable. Sarah, Patrick, Raymond, you're great. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Joe.